Okay, quiet on the set, everybody. Stand by. Roll camera. Speed. Roll sound.
Speed.
Mark it. And cue talent.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Art Aldridge, and this week in production, it's a wrap on Iditarod 52.
This Week in Production is produced by Art Aldridge. The thoughts and opinions expressed here are undoubtedly his own. You can reach Art at thisweekinproduction@gmail.com. This is Don McGee. To book me for voiceovers, please call 908-451-6760. Thanks.
Joining me back from the frozen tundra is my compadre and friend, Mr. Thomas Chartrand, Shoreline Media Pros. Tom, welcome.
I'm glad to be back east. I've caught up on my sleep, 14 hours of sleep yesterday, 10 today, and I'm almost back on East Coast Standard Time.
Well, welcome home. It was a journey in many ways, as it always
absolutely
is. It's Iditarod, and it wouldn't be Iditarod without some trials and, you know, some tribulations, but...
Always. It's just overcoming them, and we always do.
We do. And then it's just good when it's over.
A cause for celebration, right?
It is.
Right here?
I'm going to raise a little glass today to you.
I'm raising my pantalones in your direction.
Oh, pantalones.
Añejo. Yes. Okay. Enjoying it. The Matthew McConaughey tequila, it's tasty, a little sweet, but additive free.
I'm going to show this. This is my new fave, Arte Nome 1414 Repo. Very nice bottle.
That is a nice one. So. And this is a good taste. I don't know that I would get it too much more often, but we always know no one likes to have any additives in their pantalones.
Is that an additive in your pantalones, or are you just happy to see me?
Exactly. I'm just happy to be home.
So no discussion of Iditarod would be complete without revisiting last year's predicament.
Yes.
And last year, as with every year, but last year we had some challenges.
Well,
I always start the planning for the current race by looking at what went right and what went wrong the year before.
Right.
And there were some things that, you know, went pretty well last year, but there were a lot of things that were a disaster. And some of those things were, you know, the internet connectivity, especially in Nome, the audio in Nome, which we were relying on the city of Nome's audio system to deliver to us. It just was
a
disaster. And I think in a general sense, last year, I got a little too complicated for the size of our crew and the size of our budget. I always try to do probably more than I need to or more than I should. And part of that is because everyone is like, well, you know, it has to be top of the top, best of the best. And I always want to do my best, but there are limitations. And we had some problems with the IFB setup, which was very complex last year. I was running
absolutely
Dante networks. I was running TeamViewer screen sharing. We were sending audio back over SDI audio injectors and controlling the mix. And it was very complex.
We didn't have a reliable internet connection, so that made it all the more
right. Well, that was like really the nail in the coffin, is that we didn't get internet connectivity until, you know, hours before the show, and it prevented us from doing any setup because I couldn't see anything. I had no way to see what was happening. So those were the objectives to overcome for this year. And one of the things that I thought about doing was just simplifying, still doing a high quality production, but simplifying some of the componentry.
Stepping back some of the complexity of it. Absolutely.
Well, again, the mantra that I got from the Iditarod itself was we need to cut budget significantly. And that manifested itself in a couple of ways, but like, how do you already cut a constrained budget? Well, you probably have to cut heads. And if you're going to cut heads, then I'm going to have to cut how complex, you know, the show is going to be.
All the things that we can do. Yeah, absolutely.
Because last year I sent robotic cameras up. We had fiber. We had networking. We had IFB setups. We had a lot of pieces.
NDI video. We had delays and not delays.
Right. And so basically out of all of the things that we deployed last year, I decided, let me just get back to the basics. Let's try to strip back the complexity, because we were going to have two less heads on the live streaming team. And I said, let's try to rethink how we deploy this. So one of the things was to cut out the robotics, cut out the infrastructure to support the robotics, which is the fiber and the switches and the power supplies and all of that componentry. And I was still planning to use the Intinor systems, which are video encoders and decoders and routers and pieces that make the glue work. I was still planning to use
those. And they've proven themselves over the years. Absolutely.
Yeah, now the Intinor stuff's always been solid, but this year, and we'll get into it, this year was, you know, no exception.
Yeah.
But use the infrastructure that we had, still backhaul the camera feeds that we were producing for some of the broadcasts, because there's no provision, there's no budget, there's no infrastructure in a lot of these venues. So, so cut budget, you know, make the problems go away. And oh, by the way, instead of doing two live broadcasts, you have to do a third live broadcast.
A third, exactly.
Which was something that the TV station used to do, which was the ceremonial start. That was now our responsibility, you know, and no more money and no more people and no more time.
And to compound that, less time for setup. We pushed a day forward, so we had less time to carry on our responsibilities of building cameras for the whole film crew, as well as prepping for an additional program to cover.
Right. We really got into some, just again, trying to keep the budget down and trying to make it work. And I know that, you know, we both have worked under many different situations where it's time and pressure and
deadlines,
you know, and things like that. But it's always, you know, a little nerve wracking.
Absolutely.
But we got through, we got there, all the gear arrived. We did our first live broadcast, was the banquet. And the way that I got around the robotics was I used the cameras that we were renting for the trail. The trail cameras were becoming some of the live streaming cameras for the broadcasts, which would normally
be
the robots.
That was really smart. Just, you know, getting used to them, having them set up, having them already pre-built into the packages that were going to go out in the trail, we were able to make use of them immediately when we needed them.
Right. Another piece that was new this year, which was unfortunate because it caused a lot of angst, was the use of Starlink satellite systems. The telco in Alaska is a sponsor of the race, and they provide services for the live streaming and the communications for the race. And they were providing these iDirect satellites, which are like 24 millimeter dishes that, you know, would usually top out around 4 megabits per second of upload speeds. We had some better results last year because someone was juicing up our uploads a bit, but they were very stable last year.
Right.
And they said, well, we can't do that this year for some reason, so we're going to use Starlinks. And I was like, well, okay, Starlinks sound good, but they're untested.
Right.
And one of the problems was that they didn't let us test until 3 weeks before we were going up there.
If 3 weeks, it was like 2 weeks ahead of going up.
It was really nerve-wracking, and we were putting a lot of faith in something that didn't deserve to have faith put in it.
Correct.
So
although the initial tests were promising, we had some fabulous throughput speeds and like, okay, if it performs like this all the way along the trail, this will be a good thing.
They were promising, but again, until you test and you try to test as much as you can, but we couldn't test everything. And it worked out well in the end, but we got through the, you know, the first couple of broadcasts and that all worked great. One of the things for the trail that I was trying to do this year was to reduce the need to have someone on call 24 hours a day, because again, it's not budgeted that way. It's hard to dedicate resources to it. Usually it falls on my lap. And after usually the first 3 days, I'm very, very burnt out and I can't always get my head clear to prep for the live finish show. So I designed a system using some software called Mimo Live, which I've talked about. It runs the really the backbone of the video switching and graphics for this race and for all my live streaming stuff.
Right.
And I designed a little mobile interface for the camera operators. And the idea was that the camera operators were going to control their own live hits with the talent. And we had two camera crews that were going to have on-camera talent with them, and then a third that was just doing sort of off-camera commentary. So he didn't really need to have a setup. But I built this system using multiple documents, running on one Mac Studio, an M1 Mac Studio. It worked well in testing.
It was clever. It was really user-friendly, which was neat to see. Yeah.
Yeah, you could do it on a phone, and you were going to have internet because you had the Starlinks. If there was no internet, there was no feed. So if you had
Just an HTML document, so very low overhead too.
Yeah, very low overhead. So that worked well, but the problem was that we were getting buffering in the streams from the Starlinks. What I wound up doing was, and this is like one of the nice things about the Intinor system, is that I have full remote control of every piece of equipment that I deploy. I can go into the encoder and change any of the number of settings.
Including streaming protocols too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Actually, originally what I was planning to do was sending the streams back to me in New York, but also at the same time sending a backup stream to our server, our video server, which is our Wowza instance. And the idea was, okay, if something happened to the New York control room, then we could switch to the backup over, and it would be seamless on the website. Right. And I think that's where we were actually having the buffering issues, that the server wasn't handling both ingests from New York and from the trail. And what I wound up doing at the last minute was just redirecting to the website directly, but I was able to use SRT. Normally we would send like something like an RTMP feed back to the server, but SRT really, with the satellites and the latency that we get from the satellites, which is very high, that SRT feed was stable and smooth and very, very good quality. And part of the reason this year that we had, I think, just excellent picture quality was that the Intinor released a new HEVC codec that I was able to add to my systems as a software update. You know, pay a license fee, but basically get new features and new capabilities that it didn't ship with, which is awesome. And by using that HEVC codec, I could basically cut the bandwidth in half and yield the quality. So sending a 2.5 megabit HEVC stream back to the Wowza server over SRT was so stable and so clean and so beautiful. I mean, better than anything ever had at 5 megabits on the iDirex.
Yeah, overall. And the more stable connection we did have with the Starlinks all the way through, which we gradually discovered as the race went on. I mean, together, it was fantastic.
Yeah. So just having that flexibility in the gear was really important. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, I like the Intenor products. So we made a little pivot, which actually worked out really well for me because it freed me up to manage more of the live broadcasting pieces that had to be, you know, planned for and arranged. Right. So that part, that actually was a win-win in some ways. I think we could go back to something where the camera operators have control of the picture and the start and stop and the record and the upload. But, you know, that's probably, you know, a project for another team down the road. One of the plans this year for at least the video coming in and out of the Intenors was mm-hmm. to not use NDI, but to use baseband video.
Yeah.
And in the past, I've always used NDI just because it's all network friendly and everything is really IP based in my production pipeline. But the one thing, I guess, with Intenor is that they don't always stay current with the current NDI. NDI updates very frequently. And if you don't match NDI versions with what's on the Intenor, you run into some problems. And I wanted to avoid those headaches. So I basically added some video cards that allowed me to do in or out, really either way. And something I learned this year that was really surprising was they can custom config the cards to give me two in and two out on the same card instead of four in or four out.
Oh, that's a surprise. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so we wound up having the one ingest system in Anchorage. It came up with us. I left it there. I used it in Anchorage to basically take the Starlinks and bring them into the hotel, which was our control room. And right. So the cards were set up for output because I was using them to bring in, you know, the IP feeds and then bring them out to my M3 laptop, which was a beast. And that worked really well. And
held up so black, well.
I had a Blackmagic capture card, and I was bringing in the four feeds over SDI, switching them, streaming them back out through MIMO. And that was all great. But then when we got to Gnome and I was back in New York, that ingest system had to now accept feeds. So I had them switch it remotely to be four video ins.
Right.
And then on my system back in New York, I had them set the card to be four video outs. And then at the last minute, our broadcast partner in Alaska said, hey, we'd love a feed of the stream. Can you give us, you know, we could send you an encoder if you want. I said, okay, send me an encoder and I'll, you know, give you a connection and I'll send it back on SDI over the interwebs. But of course they didn't.
Where was that? I was going to say, did it make its way to New York or what?
No, they never sent it. And they said, okay. Hey, can you just give us an SRT feed? And I said, maybe, but the production software that I use, MIMO, does not support SRT output.
Right.
It doesn't have the ability to encode yet in SRT. So without getting overly complicated, I said, you know what? I can do this on the Intenor router. The Intenor router can take my program output over SDI and encode it as a SRT stream, and the TV station can pull it in. The only problem was that I was using the four outputs of the card. Yeah. I needed one more. So I got them to flip one of the outputs to be an input, and I sent it back, and it was perfect. So really, like, you know, I couldn't have done the show without Intenor in many ways. And
so flexible.
As a matter of fact, it was as I was doing my testing in January, getting all the gear prepped. One of the encoders, the field encoders, wasn't booting up right. Like it would turn on, but it wouldn't boot up right. And I couldn't resolve it. And they tried to help me remotely. And we could never see the box on the network. And I said, it might be stuck in a BIOS loop or something. And 2 days later, there was a new replacement encoder at my doorstep.
That's so amazing.
Without missing a beat, I was just able to put it in the system and go.
Straight from Sweden. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was great. Another thing that worked really good this year was the cellular component, because these Intenor encoders have a bonded cellular component to it. And I've never been able to use it because getting cellular SIM cards has always been a pain in the ass. Either you have to buy
big challenge
prepaid cards and then they run out and you can't roll them over, or you have to buy ongoing service and you're paying for it no matter whether you're using it or not. I don't do enough live streaming, especially over cellular, that it would warrant me having, you know, 16 cellular accounts with three carriers to make it work. It just wasn't financially viable. So I've always struggled with using cellular because I'd never had a good option. And I tried this,
especially in Alaska. Yeah.
Well, at one point there was a company called Twilio that was providing something called a Super SIM, which would let you take one SIM card and tell it you'd want it to be AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile. Right. But I could never make them work in Alaska. We tried it 1 year and it just didn't
couldn't work. Get anything. Yeah.
So flash forward to last year's NAB. I saw Teradek had announced this new thing called Teradek Data. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And it basically is SIM cards that will let you work with any carrier all over the world. And you register them with your Teradek core account. And then they bill you as you go. You can buy a certain amount of data. And then if you go over, it'll just keep working and they'll bill you. So I was like, oh, this sounds better than what I had
promising
before, but we don't know if it's going to work in Alaska. But I did buy four cards and test them, and they worked great. And I said, okay, let me try it, and we'll run this as a backup in Anchorage, at least, where we do have at least two networks that we know of, AT&T and Verizon. And we used it as a backup, and it worked great. And it actually worked.
In the ceremonial start, right, where we had some structural challenges with the Starlinks, and that ended up coming through, if I remember.
Right. The Starlinks are not very good if they're they don't have a wide. I would say they probably need a 50-foot radius of open space,
right,
to get at least in Alaska to get a shot to the sky, and we didn't have that in Anchorage. And so one of the packs, which was by a tall building, was actually pulling cellular data in addition to the minimal Starlink that it was getting. So,
and it helped. Yeah,
it did help. So that actually worked really well too. So anyway, we flipped over the cards. We, you know, got everything up to Nome. You were out on the trail. I actually sent my oldest son, 23-year-old, son up there to help.
Send him blind out there.
Yeah, he was working basically as like I was paying him, but the race wasn't paying him. But it was like, you know, he had been up with me in the summer. He was interested in going back. He just graduated. He's sort of between jobs. I said, perfect. You can go up. You can help Tom put together a broadcast. Because again, shorthanded. And, you know, the race doesn't really realize what it takes to put on, you know, a production of this level. And even trying to stay within a small confine, one person, it's too much.
There's just too many things happening. So he was such a big help getting the musher banquet at the finish started, helping us get gear together. It was really a bare bones crew on the live streaming and production side.
Very, very small crew. Very small crew. So again, some of the things that I wanted to do to simplify the setup was minimize you know, what we're doing for IFB. We were just using Unity this time instead of doing the Dante network and all that setup. We weren't doing as much with Roland packages, although we were prepared for it. We didn't wind up
Right.
Doing much. So as great as everything was going, right, we just still ran into some problems in Nome.
Again, trying new things, right?
Well, it's you know, lessons learned as always, sure. Right? Because if you're not learning, you're not
absolutely
you're not growing. So one of the issues that we had this year, and again, trying to take steps to eliminate. So we had problems with the audio from the PA mic in the city of Nome. And so this year I brought up a separate system, Electrosonics, with a handheld SM57. And we were fine. Like, that all worked great.
Right.
But as a backup to that system, I put new cameras on the arch that had microphones. And we had to use something that wasn't SDI based, because you can't, for whatever reason, the Marshall cameras that I use with SDI don't have analog audio inputs.
Right.
And then it would be super complicated to add an SDI audio injector. And again, trying to keep it simple. So with new cameras, right, HDMI based, I'm using new fiber transceivers. They're AJA Fido transceivers. They worked great.
They were fantastic.
I was putting analog audio right from the cameras on the arch, just in case. Just in case we lost the mic at any point during the week that it's being used, we would have
at least had some
audio
live. Yeah.
Right. Because no one wants to be on the other end of a phone call saying there's no audio on the finish and the fans are upset.
Where is it?
Yeah. So, with all that being said, the plan for the finish was to have one of the big handheld cameras that the documentary team uses, have one of those cameras used for the finish cam. And last year we ran into some issues. We were using it over a wireless VAXIS system.
Right.
And I think we had some issues with power and mounting. So this year I said, you know what, I'm gonna rent a Teradek Bolt, and the Bolt is gonna have a gold mount. It'll integrate into the back of the camera, so there's no weird cabling or issues with mounting and arms and falling off. But the problem was that we didn't have, I think we lost line of sight.
Line of sight, absolutely.
Between the control room and the arch. Because once the champion comes in, everyone crowds into the chute. And you really need a clean line of sight. We tested it, and it tested fine, but there was no one in the chute. You know, when we tested
it. When everyone's there, it just gets crowded. There's no control, and that was what we were victim
of. So that was frustrating, and that didn't work well. One of the other new things that I wanted to do this year was try to use a drone for live picture, because there's a part of the finish where the musher is coming off the frozen ocean. He comes onto the street and he goes about 5 or 6 blocks up the street. And we've done all kinds of crazy stuff, like use a Hollyland unit in the back of a truck and
following him with a truck. Yeah.
Poor Christian froze his hand 1 year trying to operate. Yeah. And so I was like, well, maybe we can try using a drone. And we were able to get a waiver. And we were able to, I was going to take the RTMP feed from the phones. The app, the DJI app has a way for you to take the stream and send it out RTMP. And again, my Intinors can accept RTMP streams. So I'm like, okay, we'll just hook the phone up to the Wi-Fi network and then we'll stream it back to me. And that, unfortunately, was a train wreck.
It was. In training, it worked. I mean, in testing, you know, we had clean signal. We did it before anything happened. And coming into practice, we thought it would work. And now, every time you went to it,
we didn't ever figure out exactly why that didn't work. My theory is that we had too many people on the Wi-Fi router, we were overloading it.
The Wi-Fi router with all the outputs going out. Yeah.
And you know, one thing that I had known about, and we talked about it, and we didn't unfortunately have time to really deploy it, but when you have an iPhone, And some of the people had personal iPhones on the trail and things like that. You know, iPhone with all its iCloud magic, when you put that on a wireless network, especially when it hasn't been on a wireless network, it does a lot of background data uploading. Yeah. A lot.
Hauls it down.
And, you know, you get two iPhones on a network and it starts doing pictures and videos that you've been taking. You know, it can mess up your network without appearing to, you know, be, oh, well, there's only a couple things on the network. Well, they're using a lot of data. So we didn't really ever figure that out. I think in my original plan, I was hoping to use HDMI and directly into the Intinor.
Right.
And I guess there was some miscommunication with Krishna, our drone operator, about whether his remote had HDMI output or not. And he said
the smart controller didn't work with his particular model of drone. Yeah, and he didn't have that capability.
So we lost that ability to hardline. I think hardline is always going to be the safest.
Yeah.
We lost that ability. So we tried it. I think in hindsight, you know, we could do better with it, but it did add a nice element to the documentary, at least, and the replay coverage, which we were able to edit in the recorded shots.
Yeah. Thank God we were recording.
Yes, thank God we were recording. I mean, overall, I think, and again, you have to temper this because I know that the producer person is always like, well, this is not broadcast quality. And I'm like, well, you know, that may be true, but this is not a broadcast budgeted production. And, you know,
or staffed. I do a lot of live event work, and we're dealing with two and three people doing a job that typically is eight or nine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it all has to be tempered. And I think the temperament this year, the fan base was happy because they could hear.
So
the audio,
happy.
The audio was clear. The pictures, again, weren't great because we kept losing. Every time I would try to cut to a camera, it would either be the Teradek would be out of line of sight and it would fail, or I'd cut to the drone and the drone would fail. So that part of it was unfortunate, but we had enough, you know, working that we could still, you know, make a show that kept the fans happy.
The fans were happy, and that was a huge thing this year. You know, they were ecstatic all the way from the start to the finish.
Right.
And so that's a win right there.
Right. That was a win. And you know, after the big champ show, we take down, you know, a lot of the big infrastructure, but we leave these two cameras at stream for another, you know, week or so. And those were really solid. The audio was good. The picture was good. We didn't get any blinking this year. I think we've had problems with the transceivers in the past where they would get too cold and they wouldn't work.
The Fido was unstoppable. It was they were
Fido,
great.
Fido was great. And we used MIMO up in Nome to composite that and send it out, and all that worked great. And then the last, you know, piece of the banquet, you know, again, last year, if you remember, no one was staying for the banquet.
Right.
It was a budget thing. And this year was also a budget thing, because when I booked you, I originally told you you're leaving, you know, before the banquet, because that's what I was told. And then that got a little clattered up with some people and you wind up staying. And again, you know, thank you for doing so, because we couldn't have produced the show without you staying. But and it makes a difference when you have, you know, last year what I tried to do, and again, sometimes you're trying to be too clever. I had these two miniature PTZs, and I put them on the podium, literally on the podium on a stand, because it was simple enough to wire up, and I had a Mac Mini that I had remote access into, and I was basically connecting the Mini cameras to the Mac Mini and then streaming both those feeds back to me in New York, and I was combining and switching the show there, and the audio was coming in just over those two
mics, just the mics,
because we had no technical staff in Nome, so it was not great, it wasn't great. This year was a much better show because two people stayed, you and my son
and Dan,
and we were able to produce a very good show. We used some nice you know, advanced features of MIMO to bring in spreadsheet data, and you know,
that was phenomenal to me. I mean, again, it makes a two-person crew look like a five-person crew, being able to put up data and lower third graphics and roll in videos and things like that. That's the beauty of MIMO as well. And another nod to Starlink. I made the call to just forego the cable modem that was there. We had unobstructed view of the north. So I kept one of the Starlinks, and that I think gave us just that little extra bit of assurance that we were going to have an uninterrupted show.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I think, like I said, there were a lot of positives. There were a lot of wins. I think we definitely learned some stuff. I think, you know, I was thinking about this, and I'm not putting my hat back into next year's event on any level. I'm not. But I think what I would tell someone to do differently next year for the finish is put the Teradek receiver at the arch.
Backhaul, and run a line.
Backhaul that over a fiber channel and bring it back into the control room over fiber, but keep the camera and the receiver much closer than the distance that, you know, we were using. And maybe, you know, maybe even use two receivers.
And you can hop it. Yeah.
I think you can.
And we didn't have the ability to get the receiver up any higher either, especially at that late moment, you know? Yeah. So that was tough.
Yeah. So anyway, we learned some things.
Lessons learned, yeah.
We learned some things. I definitely think anything I'm going to do going forward with streaming, I would definitely use SRT as the transport mechanism. I've had many problems with RTMP in the past, especially with bit rates and latency. It just does not handle fluctuations in the latency very well. SRT is just a much superior system. Plus, you can use HEVC codec in SRT. You can't do that in RTMP.
Ah.
So some lessons learned there. And I will pass all that knowledge on to anyone watching so they can do with it as they may.
You've done a great job.
You know, you were out on the trail. You were in the weeds, as they say, with a lot of the show. Anything on your end that you want to talk about?
You know, for all the trials and tribulations we went through last year, you know, besides some of those new things that didn't work out the way we expected, I thought it was a really positive year, and I think a lot of that had to do with what we had going on the homepage, where you were going direct to the website. We made it easy to upload the videos and get the live things out there. And the Starlink, I really think that was a huge part of the success of this year's live element. So that was a stressor that didn't carry all the way to Nome. And that was a really good part of the event.
Yeah, the Starlinks were built by a satellite vendor to the telcom.
Yeah, and SGV.
SVG, and I think they're all over the country. I'm not sure. I don't think they're just in Alaska, but they built these custom Pelican 1690 cases, and it had some other electronics, and it had a bigger dish, had a bigger router, had a switch.
Yeah, it was an enterprise model as opposed to the RV. So it had a different class of connection and priority in the data transfer.
Right. And I think aside from the fact that it was heavier and, you know, you guys had to fly with it in small planes, I think, you know, going forward, you know, Starlink could be a viable option as at least backup internet or primary internet if you can't get anything where you are, but
absolutely
worked pretty well.
Yeah, it was great. I did around 52. Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. I can't say enough about the job that you did and you know, the amount of things I had to put on your plate to do.
Now we did it, and you know, we've done it in the past, and it's what it was. It came together. So yeah. Cheers.
All right. On to the next adventure.
Exactly. Cheers.
That's a wrap on This Week in Production. I don't know when the next episode will be. This has been quite a while since the last TWIP episode, but I'm really at a point now where it's, you know, I'm repeating same topics and things. So I'm only really doing
there's
special.
Some more adventures coming up. I'm sure there'll be
there,
a few things.
There are, but I'm saving special things for the podcast, not just
there you
rinse
go.
And repeat.